To order, let the record reflect that the time is 3:29 and the date is Monday, April 11, 2005. We do have a quorum, members present, Representative Crawford, Lynn Guttenberg, and myself, Chairman Anderson. Just so folks know, for next, or actually this week's schedule, but on Wednesday, we'll have House Bill 213, Alcohol Server Education by Representative Ramirez, House Bill 226, Personal Information Breach by Representative Guerra, and House Bill 227, the Alaska Small Loans Act. Today we have Senate Bill 129, Wrongful Filing of Liz Pendens by Senator Huggins, Senate Bill 52, Occupation Corporation Bank Securities Bill, Governor Murkowski's sponsorship, and then House Bill 157, Electric Phone Co-op and Other Entities by our committee. So Senate Bill 129, if we could have...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Deborah Grunman, staff to Senator Charlie Huggins. With me today is Ruth Hamilton Hesse. We're working together on this. She's Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. CS to Senate Bill 129, Judiciary, is an act relating to the wrongful recording of a notice of pendency of an action relating to Title II or right to possession of real property. Senate Bill 129 discourages abusive filings of illegal Liz Pendon notices and, in fact, makes it a Class A misdemeanor to file a wrongful notice of a Liz Pendens. While the filing does not create a formal lien, such a notice can have an impact similar to that of a lien on the ability of the targeted person to do business with the affected real estate. Senate Bill 129 responds to instances of nuisance filings used as a form of retribution against public officials. Current law is clear that Liz Pendens are only supposed to be filed against property for which the title or right to possession is subject to litigation, but the recorder's office currently has no way to prevent people from filing improper Liz Pendens. Ordinarily, the improper filing is against property that is not subject to dispute. However, the filing is made simply because the filer has a grievance against the owner or someone connected with the owner. There's an example. In 2003, a former state employee filed a Liz Pendens targeting the home development property mining claims of members of Alaska Board of Game, an assistant attorney general, and a real estate developer. None of the properties were actually the subject of a title or a possession dispute, but the case took months and thousands of dollars in attorney time to resolve. I appreciate your consideration of this bill.
Okay.
Representative Lynn?
How many of these Liz Pendens abuses have there been?
I'm going to refer to the Attorney General's office. Thanks.
Representative Lynn, for the chair. We've had at least...
You need to state your name for the record.
Ruth Hamilton Hesse for the record. The last name is spelled H-E-E-S-E, just a clarification. Representative Lynn through the chair. We do have two instances that we know of where this has happened that have been rather high profile. Whether they have occurred elsewhere, we're not really knowledgeable at this point moment, because oftentimes you don't know that a Liz Pendens has been filed in your real property until you go to do something with your real property. And that actually wasn't, you know, the people that were involved in the Board of Game decision that Ms. Grunman references, they didn't know until somebody went to do something with their property. So
high-profile case.
Pardon?
High-profile case.
I suppose, yeah. Yes.
And Ruth, I have a question. Let's backtrack just real briefly. So members of the committee who I've filed as pendants when I worked in a law firm right out of law school, many of them, but they were often in either commercial transaction or divorce proceedings. Can you explain, just kind of in a nutshell, what a Liz Pendens is?
Liz Pendens, in the very briefest definition, is a pending lawsuit. It's more formal definition, if you'd like to hear it, is under Black's Law Dictionary, a notice filed on public records for the purpose of warning all persons who are interested in the property that the title to certain property is in litigation and that they are in danger of being bound by an adverse judgment, which means that there's a cloud on your title by virtue of this filing.
And you file this Liz Pendens, just simple pleading paper. You can get it, go to a copy store and get an example, and then you file it with the recorder. And then if someone wants to purchase or do any transaction, as you noted for the record, it's clouded. So they see that and say, ooh, I'm alarmed by that notice. And that's why there's some frivolity going on, and that's the concept behind this legislation, to say, wait, you can't abuse it or you'll be sanctioned. And what's the penalty that this states?
The penalty is a second degree misdemeanor, and under that law, that criminal statute, an individual would be subject up to $10,000 fine or up to a year in prison, or an organization that frivolously files such a document would be subject to a $200,000 fine. But in most cases, it's likely that, you know, the fine would be much less and the prison term would be less. But the fact that we have on the books already a law that was passed in 98 that makes other kinds of recorder office filings criminal, if this type of, you know, frivolous nature, we think this would be an effective deterrent.
Okay, are there any questions? Representative Guttenberg.
This is, thank you, Ms. Hesse. This has no jurisdiction in the fact that it's any one person against any other person, not just a state member, a state employee or a county or a municipal. It's just one person against another, regardless of anything.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, it does have a broader application. It could be for people who, if outside of the realm of public decision-making process, if something like this happens, that the land isn't at issue, that person could take advantage of this law. But this law is being spurred, or this amendment to the existing law is being spurred by the very situation that we are here discussing with you.
Yeah, Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. And the motivation of bringing this forward is this action against the Board of Game. Is that right?
Yes, and the experience that was behind the 98 mm-hmm. law being passed, where, you know, the state was able to effectively put down the use of these kind of frivolous filings, but now somebody's cleverly gone out and found something else to use.
Representative Guttenberg.
And like you said, nobody knows about this until they actually go to sell or do some action with their property. What happens with people that have already done this previous to the date of this passing, or what is this?
Does
this cover that at all?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, that question has not really been directly asked before, so okay. I could check on it. But what I suspect is the minute that this law becomes final, and if a notice were to be filed subsequent to that date, I think they would be subject to this new law. I don't know about anything that might be pending. That would have to check.
Thank you. Representative Rothberg.
Thank you, Madam Attorney General. Why didn't the current statute apply to the case that is represented as an example? Because it is a false instrument, or is it not a false instrument?
Representative Roper, through the chair, the 98 law, the one that's current, right. Dealt with liens against property. This is a different animal. It's a different type of document.
Right, okay, I see. Yes. So it's the way the statute was drafted.
Correct.
Okay, under Title 40 as a lien. Okay. And Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Follow up. You said a second degree misdemeanor. Is that a Class B misdemeanor in Alaska? Or?
I believe so, yes. Oh, okay. Oh no, it's I've been A. corrected. Duly corrected. It's a Class A misdemeanor.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, if there are no other questions, you folks can stand by. We'll go to Mike Flegel, Board of Game and Fish. Mike, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
Go ahead, please. Testify. State your name for the record as well.
Okay, good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Mike Flegel, and I currently reside in Anchorage. I am the chairman of the Alaska Board of Game and was a member of the Board of Game when this lawsuit was filed against the board that's being referred to in the discussion here. The lawsuit was not only directed against the department and the board, but was directed against specific board members and as individuals. And in so doing, the gentleman that filed the claim also did this Liz Pendens filings against properties that most of us on the board at the time owned. Fortunately for me, that was all that was readily available to him were some prospecting claims that I filed with a couple of friends in a few years past. But other colleagues of the board obviously had some pretty major problems trying to straighten this out, Dana Pruse being the particular one. And this is where it all came to light, as our assistant attorney general there is referring to. It was found by him, and subsequently the Department of Law rooted out the rest of these filings, and so we were involved in a long, drawn-out process to get those cleared. I'd like to just point out that we on the Board of Game serve in a voluntary capacity on the board. However, we do receive a daily stipend for or honoraria for serving on the board. But these types of actions where we don't feel that we are adequately held against cause, I'm not sure of the correct term there, but to where we can be personally filed against for actions that we take as officials of the state, actions with all of the best interest of the state and the best available biology and under the statutory and constitutional authority that's been given us. It just really makes it kind of difficult to try to be to be as willing to serve in some of these controversial matters. I can say honestly that it certainly hasn't thwarted me at all in my goal in serving on the board, but I can see where it sure could be a problem for other people. And I think that the intent of the law here would really help alleviate some of that problem. Like I say, this is the only time that it's ever happened since I've been on the board, but that's not to say it couldn't happen again, given the nature of the issues that we deal with. There's a lot of public controversy involved, and there are a lot of things that happen that this bill won't address that happened to us that it's at some point in time might need to be addressed as well. But I'll just stick to the merits of the bill here and would like to speak in favor of it. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. It's
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Schmeagle, I mean Flegel.
Okay, are there any questions for
Mr. Schmeagle?
Representative Roepberg.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank Mr. Flegel and his colleagues on the board for serving and having put up with stuff like this.
Yeah. Good. Okay, Representative Gutenberg?
I'm not for Mr. Flegel, but for Ms. Hesse.
Go ahead.
What's the definition of reckless disregard? Is that a standard?
It is a standard. It is defined. I don't have it right off the top of my head, but it would be something akin to, not knowingly doing something that probably is not quite right. But there is a definition for it.
Okay. That's fine.
I don't see anyone else wishing to testify. Is there anyone online that wishes to testify in Senate Bill 129? And anyone in the audience? No? Then I will close public testimony. Hello?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Mike Flegel. I apologize. I was trying to figure out who the chairman of the committee was, and I heard somebody else say, Madam Chairman, so I thought, okay, I got it now. I do apologize.
It's okay, Mike.
Okay. Are there any more questions for... Then can I have a motion to move the bill to the next committee? Is there one more committee?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so it moves on to Judiciary. Representative Lynn?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I would move a CS for House Bill, CS for Senate Bill, number 129, Judiciary, 24-LS0714-G, with individual recommendations.
Hearing no objections, so moved.
And the attached fiscal
note there?
Yep.
The unattached fiscal note.
Secretary can always add that, I realize. Good, thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Okay, Rick, come on up. We have next Senate Bill 52, Occupation Corporation Bank and Securities.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rick Urien. I'm the Director of the Division of Occupational Licensing. I apologize for not being here at the beginning of the meeting. I was one of the had too many places to be at the same time today. The bill before, in September of last year, the governor adopted Administrative Order Number 219, which moved the corporations functions from the Division of Banking, Securities, and Corporations to the Division of Occupational Licensing. This is a great management tool. It's something the way it should have been organized years ago, because we have so many common issues. And so the bill before you is a pure housekeeping measure. It makes no substantive changes to the law. All it does is remove the various, all references to specific divisions and puts in the word department. And the end result of when this bill finally passes, hopefully, we'll be able to change our name from the Division of Occupational Licensing to something that will more accurately reflect our new task of the corporation's function.
Thank you. Is there any question? Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Roper, then Guttenberg.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if the director wanted to know if he changes his name to something more expansive, he might be more readily accepted for the House Finance Committee. Oh, I'll withdraw the question.
Representative Guttenberg.
Oh, I was wondering if you wanted to put this in a subcommittee, that's all.
Any other questions?
I'll be on it.
Okay.
Chairman?
Well, let me see if there's anyone else wishing to testify. That's okay.
Let's one to Mr.
There aren't, are there?
No.
Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Arian, is there going to be any investigatory or other activities that's going to require your division to take steps to police this new responsibility you have?
Through the chair, no, we'll do no more policing than we do. Actually, it will give us, we can do that in-house policing just by, there's lots of people who have corporations who think when they get a corporation, they're in business and they never gotten a business license. Are we? So this will put us in-house. We will finally have one a common data bank that will be able to do these things in-house. It's not much. It is a little policing, but it's very it'd be very elementary stuff.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. And maybe Representative Roper touched on it, but is the now that we're moving it from, no longer we're calling it the division, we're putting it into the department. Does the department have authorities that the division didn't have that would be usable in enforcement or prosecution?
No, we assume no more, absolutely no more authority than the department. What it's now, it says it's under a division, you know, and there's some specific places where a division of banking and securities is mentioned. Some places in the statutes, divisions of occupational license are mentioned. We are doing away with all those specific mentions of, there'll be no division names in the statutes. It'll all be department. We're all one department. And if you understand what I mean, yeah. This will allow us to change our name because our name of the division will not be reflected in any statute.
Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Arian, one of the issues I understand from the Division of Banking, Securities, and Corporations was the oversight for Native corporations in the state of Alaska. And some of the activities and problems revolved around their elections and for boards of directors and the like. Would that, the responsibility fall under your auspices then?
All the Native corporations, well, yes.
So the actual activities of enforcing the statutes, and there are statutes relating to Native corporations and other types of corporations on our books now, you would have that responsibility rather than the Division of Banking and Securities. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And Mr. Chairman, are there other activities that are you going to be, did you get personnel or people to go with this executive order?
There are 9 positions with, I think, 3 vacancies, 6 people. You probably need some more. We need some more.
So this has been done by executive order, and all you're doing in this bill is just doing a name change.
Yes.
But by doing this, we're ratifying the governor's executive order, wouldn't you say?
This is a one-stop business shop. When you go, you can become a corporation and get a business license in the same place. We're going to be online. We're in the process now of doing corporation stuff is online. It's we'll be high tech in the United States, and the people who are using our service love it.
And your business licensing is really easy too. I renewed mine in about 2 seconds.
Correct.
Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'd just like to show it wasn't an executive order, it was an administrative order. Therefore, the legislature had no opportunity to accept or reject that, or frankly, just reject it, which is our right. So the governor did this on his own, whether we liked it or not. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Guttenberg.
Mr. Urien, I saw you on the floor with a plaid jacket and a pipe in your mouth.
Oh, yeah.
He was literally on the floor? Was this?
And your hair was longer than mine.
I've asked absolutely everyone what I said. And no one remembers what I said, but they remember what I was wearing and what my hair looked like. And then I was smoking a pipe.
Representative Roper.
Yeah, on this point, Mr. Chairman, I take notice that there was a headline in the Daily News Saturday on the same subject again. This thing, that was 1975. It won't go away. 30 years later.
Daylight savings.
Daylight savings.
That's right.
That we're referring to the first televised broadcast of the Alaska State House of Representatives.
That's right. That's what we're referring to.
Director Urien was, as Representative Urien, was a member of the legislature.
You folks mind in the audience? We're trying to have a discussion here. Just kidding.
Now, anyway, they adopted your amendment, as I recall.
Did I still don't know what I said.
You offered an amendment, and it was adopted.
Let me close the public hearing, and if I could have a motion to move the bill out, unless someone has a major problem. This sounds like just a conforming of that executive order.
Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
I move the CF for Senate Bill 52 with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal note or notes.
Hearing no objection, so moved. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, sir. Okay, next we have House Bill, last bill on the agenda, House Bill 157, Electric Phone Co-op and Other Entities. It's the title. It's our, through my chairmanship, Labor and Commerce bill. Quite a few people to testify, and I'm going to ask everybody to keep their testimony to 2 minutes, just because I don't want to go past 5 o'clock. In fact, I'd like to end in less than an hour because we have another caucus today at 5. So I have John Bittner here. John, why don't you go ahead and for the record, go through the bill and what it does, and then I will note for the record that we're going to hold the bill and not move it out today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Bittner. I'm staff to Representative Anderson. What we're trying to do with House Bill 157 is fairly simple. This makes two basic changes to the Alaska Electric and Telephone Cooperative Act, which is AS 1025. Basically, AS 1025 grants the electric and telephone cooperatives broad powers to conduct various activities. Those powers include the ability to become a member of or other cooperatives or corporations or own stock in them, and to do and perform any other act and thing, and have and exercise any other power which may be necessary, convenient, or appropriate to accomplish the purpose for which the cooperative is organized. HB 157 proposes to clarify AS 1025-020 to make clear that a cooperative utility may own an interest in another entity that does not provide electric utility services. This particular change was made because of recent court decisions in Georgia, Mississippi, and Texas, which have called into question a cooperative's ability to own subsidiary corporations which don't directly deal with their particular utility. There have been other court cases in other states that have gone the other way. What we're trying to do is help interpret Alaska's laws in the off chance that there is a lawsuit in the future that deals with this particular issue, to stay within the intent of the statutory language. The second change we make in HB 157 is the addition of limited liability companies to the list of entities a cooperative may become a member of. Limited liability companies, or LLCs, are a relatively new type of member-owned legal entity which became popular after these statutes were written. We're basically just bringing the statutes up to speed, frankly, with this addition.
I'm going to also interrupt you,
of course,
and ask, I'm going to make the motion that we adopt CS for sponsor substitute for House Bill 157 version X for discussion purposes. Hearing no objection, the bill that Mr. Bittner is going through is what is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for not catching that earlier. This is a CS we came up with working with the co-chairman of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, which was the previous committee this bill was in, as well as the Department of Revenue and the various parties for and against what we have here. Basically, we took out subsection 9 of the Community and Regional Affairs version, which stated that cooperative could only use fuel oil that was not needed for electric generation. By putting this that particular language specifically under that section, it was felt that it was outside. It granted too much authority to the cooperatives outside of what we were trying to do.
John, wasn't that by Representative Olson? And didn't he agree to this change in this committee? So
yes,
this
sir.
Is, and he recommended that as chair of that previous committee, and he understands that we're extracting that through the CS adoption.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. He's fully aware. He's seen this version of the CS long before we brought it here, and he has agreed that he has absolutely no problem with the changes we're making. Basically, we took that out because the cooperatives don't want the direct authority to sell heating oil as a cooperative. They want the authority to, if their members ask them to, in a region where it is necessary, own all or part of another entity, a subsidiary corporation or entity, that will sell this heating oil or bulk fuel storage or whatever have you. Not necessarily to do it as a cooperative, which raises certain issues both tax-wise and otherwise. And with that, I'll open myself up to questions. There's also members of electric co-ops who have brought this legislation to us available for questions.
Great.
As well.
I'm going
to
defer committee's questions and have Eric Hill come up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With the Alaska Power Association. And Eric, we'll have you go through the impetus behind the legislation. And then we have quite a few people that I think have concerns, obviously from fuel companies, and then we have electrics that I think are supportive, and we'll have this dialogue ongoing.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Eric Yule. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Power Association. My trade association members generate roughly 90% of the electricity throughout the state of Alaska. Mr. Chairman, I believe Mr. Bittner did a very nice job of characterizing the need for this particular legislation. There have been test cases in other states that have brought into question the authority of electric co-ops to be in certain businesses. Some states have ruled in favor of the co-ops, some contrary. My board of directors passed a resolution basically saying Alaska's electric cooperatives, and this is very short, are increasingly receiving requests from members asking the cooperative to become the full-service energy supplier in the community, supplying not only electricity, but also home heating oil and other forms of energy. And then, of course, they go on to discuss the problems that we've had in some other states. Mr. Chairman, this particular bill, 157, the version which you have before you today, which we also endorse, confirms co-op's authority to own some or all of other for-profits, nonprofits, or LLCs, and play by the same rules of these entities in the conduct of their business. If we do otherwise, we would lose our tax-exempt status. In other words, if we own or have shares in any of these companies, we would pay all due taxes and play by the same rules as everybody else. Mr. Chairman, believe it or not, nonprofit organizations, and I'm not talking about cooperatives now, I'm talking about nonprofit organizations, already have the authority to own for-profit, nonprofit, and LLCs. We're really trying to get the same authority that even nonprofits presently have, and basically that means that we're going to play by the rules. The examples of the types of yes, sir.
Oh, sorry, we're puppeting back and forth. Continue.
I thought he was commenting on my wording.
No. Forgive me, Mr. Hill.
Examples of the kind of business that the co-ops would envision getting into would be exporting their expertise in development of wind power, internet access in communities where there is no access, providing management for other utilities that perhaps don't have the capabilities of some of the larger utilities, and we're doing this in some occasions already, and even at the request of the Denali Commission and others. And more recently, we have been asked by certain communities, at least two, for instance, to get into the fuel distribution business. And once again, these are situations, at least in so far as fuel distribution, where the local distributors are looking to get out of the business, and the communities are thinking that because the co-ops have a certain infrastructure in place, expertise, that they could perhaps bring down the cost of fuel in rural Alaska. And once again, I guess I would like to reiterate, however, that it's not our objective to be competing with the fuel industry, Crowley, Yukon Pacific, Petro Marine, Delta Western. But where there is a community and an existing distributor wants to get out of the business, certainly there's a need for somebody to take on this sort of expertise, and we would see ourselves as being a potential entity to do that. That's not to say that another for-profit couldn't come into the community and do the same if the existing distributor could go ahead and sell his business. So basically we're trying to clarify that we can develop subsidiaries to protect ourselves from the liability that any other corporation would be wanting to protect themselves from. It's as really as simple as that. Now, the fuel industry has come before the Labor and Commerce Committee and suggested that because of tax breaks and grants and so forth and so on, that we would represent undue competition and that we get PCE and so forth and so on. PCE is certainly a program that's been very beneficial to rural Alaska, but that's a program that goes directly to the consumer. It does not go to the utility. The utility does not get an advantage from it. And not only that, but not only does it go to co-ops and municipals, but it also goes to investor-owned utilities, such as Alaska Power and Telephone, which provides investor-owned electricity to some 15 villages. It's suggested that the electric co-ops will get grants that are not available to the private sector. As a matter of fact, grants, according to the Denali Commission, shall be available to any entity, whether it's a profit, nonprofit, cooperative, investor-owned, whatever. They all have access to it. And as a matter of fact, Alaska Power and Telephone, which is an investor-owned utility, has received millions and millions of dollars that basically get passed right through to their customers. And once again, that's an investor-owned utility. Denali Commission has most recently provided some $13 million to the Alaska Electric Light and Power right here in Juneau to build a transmission line over to Admiralty Island for the Greens Creek project. So all I'm saying is while the co-ops may get some grants, these grants are also available to the private sector as well. And let's not forget that the private sector also avails itself of certain programs available through the federal government, certain tax breaks, whether it's accelerated depreciation. One large barge company that plies the waters of the state of Alaska has recently put in their 10K that federal loan guarantees for construction of U.S. flag vessels under Title 11 of the Merchant Marine Act are available to them, and they are availing themselves of that. They also go on to say that pursuant to Section 607 of the same Marine Act, that they have entered into a capital construction fund agreement with the Maritime Administration to expand their fleet by deferring federal income taxes on vessel earnings deposited in the fund. So all I'm saying is we're all on the same playing field, and I think that all we're trying to do at this time, Mr. Chairman, is clarify that we can own subsidiaries, nonprofit, profit, and we would just like to be treated every bit as well as nonprofit entities and be able to protect ourselves from certain liability. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions on the committee? And this is the person to ask in terms of support of the bill because he has the expertise, Representative Roethlisberger.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Yule, didn't you mean you want to be treated as well as the for-profit entities?
Except that we're willing to forego, yes, that's true, our profit because that would have gone back to our consumers at any rate.
How would you propose that this law would be implemented in an area where there was currently some private sector fuel distributors or purveyors of fuel oils or that type of thing? Would you envision that being the case? Or
from a practical...
I'm sorry, sure. Eric, Representative Roper, you said if there is the competition of
right.
distributors or if there isn't?
Is.
Okay, and I'll supplement that just because the hypothetical was given in a community if there's A, B, and C distributor and there's and one of the aforementioned four companies provides fuel to them and the three distributors are there. One hypothetical was brought to me, which is assuming hypothetical co-op purchases through the enabling legislation one of the distributors, then the other two distributors would likely fold because of the power backing of that electric co-op purchasing the one distributor. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure what the response was in that scenario, yeah, or if that even would happen.
There's a lot of elements to this. Number one, we are not allowed to cross-subsidize. By law, we cannot cross-subsidize. Otherwise, we will lose our tax-exempt status, and I can give you the sites for that. Number two, there's probably, in most rural villages, not enough room for the capital infrastructure that would support two competing distributors. I just question how that would happen. Number three, the Denali Commission itself, if they are the major source of grants, if you will, that would somehow give us an unequal advantage, themselves has a policy that says you will not be issued a grant or a low-interest loan or anything else if it will be used to develop a business that will be in competition with somebody that's already in business. So unless we go out and get market rate loans to start up such a subsidiary, which would be a taxable entity in the first place, I don't see how we have an advantage. Number four, co-ops are owned by those people in the local community. They may come and ask the co-op to try and get into the business to compete with somebody else, but once again, the board of directors is going to look at it, and if they can't see a way to raise the capital and be competitive, that's just not going to happen. I don't know if this fully answers your question, but just from a practical standpoint, I think it's very unlikely that you would actually find the co-ops in direct competition with certainly the individuals that are presently in the business. That's not to say that if significant gouging was taking place, which is not the case, I don't believe, that the community wouldn't approach the cooperative with the idea of trying to force down the rates by virtue of getting in the business, but boy, that's a pretty heavy-handed way to drive down rates. It would cost an awful lot of money.
Look, can I answer Representative Anderson's question about the three-way scenario?
I could retract that and wait for one of the co-ops to answer. Would you prefer that?
That would
they
be
have
fine.
The expertise.
Okay. Also have, I think, Dean Thompson is also on the line, and he's our attorney, and he could probably answer that as well.
Okay. Representative Guttman?
Thank you. I mean, when you're starting dealing with all the different communities, it's really a situation where one size and maybe 10 size doesn't fit all, so it's kind of like hard to balance mm-hmm. all these things. But when you were talking about, the communities might not support two different infrastructures, when you already have a utility in place with a fuel storage and metering system and all those things, and somebody else is in the business of fuel distribution, it seems like you already have the infrastructure in place.
Well, first of all, the infrastructure itself is fuel trucks and pump trucks and that sort of thing, things that we don't have. Number two, the storage facilities that we have all are for diesel fuel, four parts removed, which is kind of a technical way of saying it's kind of a different diesel fuel than what you'd put in your truck. And what the communities need is gasoline and heating fuel, and we don't have the infrastructure for that. We would actually have to go out, maybe with a few minor exceptions, and I don't even know where they would be, and make some pretty heavy investments to get into those businesses or buy out the local distributor who perhaps wants to get out of the business. So we really don't have the infrastructure. What we may have is some management expertise that could be on a contract basis be made available, but I don't see anything wrong with that.
Okay, thanks, Eric. Eric will stand by. Now, I did state in advance of going through the public testimony that I wanted to maintain it to 2 minutes. Obviously, I give you latitude because you're the facilitator of the legislation. But so for the rest of the folks, if we could keep it to 2 minutes, then we'll be able to get to everybody. And I'm going to just go in order. It looks like Bristol Alliance has sent in correspondence, but we'll have you come on up, Robert, and state your name. And Senator Adams, would you like the Tootsie Roll?
Thank you. Chairman Anderson, member of the committee. My name is Robert Baumgartner. I'm president of Bristol Alliance Fuels. We're an independent tank farm operator and fuel supplier in Dillingham, Alaska. There's been a tremendous infrastructure that has been invested in and assembled by many private entities throughout the state of Alaska for the purpose of providing fuel products to the residents of Alaska. In my opinion, House Bill 157 provides an unfair advantage to electric utilities, including publicly funded or subsidized electric cooperatives, to provide this service in competition with private industry. There are currently 117, according to my count, motor fuel qualified dealers licensed by the state of Alaska. Now, you mentioned four major ones, Crowley, Delta Western, Yukon, and I believe it was Petro Marine, but there's still 113 others out there that will be affected by this legislation if passed the way it is. Bristol Alliance operates a single site located in Dillingham. We have an infrastructure in for our particular operation of requires invested and working capital $10 million. And that's one of two in that community. And some of these, this 117 motor fuel qualified dealers have multiple sites. You're talking about hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of infrastructure involved in providing fuel services to Alaska. I also believe that this bill will result in an even greater imbalance in the price of energy products, because the barriers to exit are pretty high in this industry. You can't take your tanks easily and move them downstream somewhere else. So those people that will be left to support private industry with a reduced marketplace will have to pay a higher price, and they're the ones who can least afford it. The Institute of Social and Economic Research previously investigated a similar idea in the early 90s for the one-time Western Alaska Fuel Cooperative located in Dillingham, Alaska. The ultimate end of years of effort and support by the Alaska Power Association, as well as the explicit assistance of the City of Dillingham and the investigation by the local electric utility, Nooshkak Electric Cooperative, found the effort was not practical because, fundamentally, there were two other suppliers there. And a fuel cooperative would not be economically feasible if required to stand on its own merits in a divided and small marketplace. Now, I would take exception to previous gentleman's comments about the assets that a cooperative could bring to a fuel venture. I was fairly intimate with the details of that study by ISER, and actually there were quite a few assets that Nooshkak Electric would have been able to bring to the table to assist in starting a competitive fuel operation. There are communities very small with no fuel delivery system in place where a waiver of current restrictions placed on electric utilities, or perhaps clarification, might apply. But this blanket approach that encourages subsidies and movement away from the entrepreneurial effort is not the way. I've spent 20 years building my business, and I hope I was able to make my point in 2 minutes.
Thank you. No, thank you, Robert. I appreciate your brevity. Questions, Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bumgardner. The ICER study was done how long ago? And
I don't remember the exact year. It was early 90s.
Do you have a copy of that? Or?
I don't. I can get it, though.
Yeah. Well, we can, too, but
it was UAA, ISER. Okay. And I believe Alaska Power Authority funded it with a $25,000 grant. And the Western Alaska Cooperative had the legislators, or a few, were in line to supply $400,000 or $600,000 for a tank or two to be added to Nooshkak Electric's current tank farm.
To add different?
To add a different product and a truck rack.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? No? Okay, thank you, Rob. Oh, okay.
That was just my question about the ICER study.
Okay, and we'll try to get a copy of that at some point.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go next to Jody Mitchell. And again, sorry, but if we can keep them to 2 minutes, it seems quick, but it'll allow us to get through all of the 14 folks to testify. Because we'll need to end in about 40 minutes. Hi.
Good afternoon, Chair Anderson, members of the committee. My name is Jody Mitchell. and I'm the CFO for IPEC, or Inside Pasture Electric Cooperative. I don't have much to say really in this regard, except that what our goal is to lower the price of fuel for our customers in the villages. It is not our desire to put anybody out of business or to compete with anybody in any unfair way. And I don't even think that we would do this, and maybe in our situation anyway, more than maybe one village, maybe two villages that I have come to mind. And you know, only where it makes sense. And we certainly are not, you know, we would still be customers of the barge companies that bring the fuel to the village. So they wouldn't be losing any volume in that regard. We just want to do this where it makes sense and where we can enhance the lives of our customers.
Okay, thanks, Jody. Are there any questions, Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Mitchell, do you see any way of addressing the concerns that we've heard here today?
Not really, in that, you know, the villages that we serve are pretty small. I think the largest one is around 900 people. And I don't see that there is room for two suppliers in our situation anyway, or, I mean, distributors, rather. In our situation anyway, the only way that we would do this is if it made sense, in that, you know, someone was exiting the industry, and you know, one place comes to mind again that has been talking about for a while. The local distributors talked about leaving, and we've been approached about whether maybe we would consider buying them out and taking over in that situation. But as far as there being two or three in a little village of, you know, 600 people, I just don't see that we would never put our necks out that far. Never. I mean, our job is to provide electricity. And like I said, if this were to pass, fuel in some places.
Okay. Thank you, Jody. We're going to go next to Brian with Delta Western, and then Richard.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brian Bogan. I'm the president of Delta Western. We're a fuel distributor in Western Alaska and Southeast Alaska. As House Bill 157 is currently drafted, I have got a significant degree of concern. The goal is certainly admirable. We would all like to see lower prices throughout the state of Alaska. Delta Western would like to see lower prices throughout the state of Alaska. But the fact of the matter is, I think this bill is barking up the wrong tree right now. The margins in our business have stayed flat, while the prices of fuel to the consumers have doubled or tripled. That is a direct cost or coming from OPEC, different sources of crude, refinery margins. It's not something that the distributors are getting. As you take a look, as the bill is currently drafted, it would allow, we believe, electric utilities that are receiving subsidized funds to compete with us. It would significantly change the way we make decisions about investing in the long-term viability of some of our sites. If we were thinking that an electric utility that did not have the same demands for a return on capital to take care of financing, they're taking care of their banks, paying their interest, could get into the business at any point in time, we would need to look very differently at the way that we turn it around and invest millions in our facilities and our people throughout the state. I've got some concerns, again, as the bill is currently drafted, when you look at the comments Mr. Ould, I believe, made earlier today. If there is no cross-subsidization from the electric utilities where they are getting subsidies, I'm not sure how they come up with the capital to turn around and invest in these fuel distributors. I mean, you've got a subsidized entity, and that it's a co-op. How are they going to come, if they're not using those assets or using that capital they've got, where are they going to come up with the money? So that part of it just doesn't make any sense. Again, we're happy. We interact with Mr. Baumgartner, who testified earlier. It's probably the worst competitor we've got. But yet we've got very uniform goals on this, and that's to make sure that we've got a level playing field and that we're not put at a competitive disadvantage. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Thanks for your brevity as well, Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, did you mean to say Mr. Bumgardner was your was the best competitor you got?
I certainly wish he was, but he is not. But sure. But it shows that even adversaries can have a common goal at certain points.
Yeah. Representative Lynn.
You said, as the bill is presently constructed, is there anything that might be done to this bill that would help protect fellows like you and your competitor?
I think
for the record, Brian has a match.
And I know there's
this is my bill, so I support it.
I know there's protocol to respond, and I'm not quite sure how it works, members. But the we could make – there are certain communities throughout the state that are not served by a fuel distributor that should be. Or that could be down the road. And certainly we have no problems if we could figure out a mechanism to allow those communities to be served by an electric utility. Again, that might make sense in certain limited cases. The problem with this bill as it's drafted is that it's one size fits all. As I've gone around and tried to meet with various members of the legislature, every one of our sites is very different. In some of our sites, I think this would be nirvana, because all of a sudden you'd have one entity that you'd be trying to collect from rather than a number of individuals you're selling heating fuel to, and it would be a great thing. The problem is, as it's drafted, it doesn't work in my limited view.
And in your response, you meant when you said nirvana, jokingly, individuals, you mean if there isn't a distributor. You've mentioned a few communities to me in our meeting previously. You're saying having a co-op being able to get into that business would be great, because you would build a co-op and then they would go to all the residents who may default or may not default.
Correct.
But then I have another question, Brian, just one, with regard to what Ms. Mitchell stated, that, hey, we have a few villages and it's really truly not to compete. I mean, for the record, we're simply here humbly to say that we are able to provide for them. Like Representative Lynn had a great question, is there any, because this is a public policy balance, and I thought about this before I sponsored it, you know, the needs of the folks who need fuel at a fair cost versus the needs of the providers who've paid for infrastructure and who are now like, wait, don't change it if I've already invested, if I have to change my rates. It's a balance that we all have to deal with in analyzing the bill. But what's your response to her saying, and I think Richard works for the same co-op, but we're not going to change anything. We're not going to do anything. We're not going to compete against you. We're not going to barge. We're not doing any of those things.
If there was some sort of authority set up, and if an electric utility wanted to go into a market that wasn't being served by private competition and hadn't been served, or the price of fuel was high in a community, and the electric utility went and made a case that this market isn't being served, we believe we can benefit the consumer, no, that's great. If as long as there is that opportunity to provide that feedback so that we can all debate the merits of each one of these individual markets, we'd be amenable to some sort of compromise like that.
Representative Roper?
Mr. Chairman, sir, what? To become a qualified dealer in the state, is there any solvency or capital requirements necessary to do that?
You're already over my head, and I apologize for that. The answer is yes, there are.
There's other folks, too. Have a lot of...
And yes, there are requirements for that, and there's bonding requirements. There are minimums that you need to in order to be exempt from paying tax directly to the distributor, and then collect it from the consumer and pass it on to the state. You have got minimum retail volumes that you need to do. So the answer is yes, and I can get you more specifics.
And, Mr. Chairman, to go into a new area, or if you're going to establish any kind of infrastructure, do you have to provide the bonding or yep. permits, or depending on the jurisdiction?
That is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And again, it would be one of our goals to make sure that the co-ops needed, or the electric utilities needed, to meet those same sorts of requirements.
Great. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate your testimony. We'll go next to Richard. Welcome. And then just for standby, batter up, we'll go, Mark, I'll go to you next because you're in the committee room here, and then we'll go to Dean, Bruce, Brad, Donna, Mark, and then that's it.
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committeeman. My name is Richard George. I'm from Angoon, a small fishing village of 700 people. I've been with the electrical utility for almost 30 years, and I've never seen fuel such an issue as it is today. Our community unemployment rate is about 80%. Our school system is on the verge of early shutdown because of not enough money. Their biggest cost is electricity. IPEC would like to alleviate the high cost of electricity by selling heating fuel. Mr. Chairman, in Angoon, we know you're not the reason for the high cost of fuel, but we are looking at you to help us deal with the high cost of living. The price of fuel is turning into a struggle to exist. An example of what I'm saying, price of fuel out there today is $2.76. In my position, I know the price of what we pay for, and the dealer is buying from the same source that we are, and we pay $1.68. If the gentleman previous to me were speaking of somehow moderating that price of fuel from to help us in the community, then maybe I wouldn't be here. This bill, if it were to pass, would help a great deal, help us a great deal in a community where unemployment and fixed income, especially to the senior citizens, would be greatly assisted.
Thanks, Richard. Richard, I had a question, and we'll get to other questions. You stated that $2.76 per gallon for fuel for the individual. You mean, so if Joe Schmo in Angoon says, hey, I need to purchase fuel, it's $2.76, but then if IPEC wants to purchase it, you're saying it's $1.68.
That's what he bought it for, just like we do.
Okay, one more time. So $2.76 was for who?
For the customer.
And then $1.68 is for the co-op.
For the co-op, and that's what the oil dealer paid.
Oh, I see. Gotcha, the distributor. Okay. Representative Rookwood.
Well, first, Mr. George, we in the legislature share some of your concerns about your community and so forth. I hope you got your community qualified for some of the money we just appropriated for the emergency fuel costs, some $6 million, but you just mentioned it, the chairman just pointed out there's a 8-cent differential between what the customer's paying and what you would pay or what your distributor's paying now. 8-cent margin is pretty thin.
I mean, $1.08.
Did I miss that?
Yeah. Okay. $2.76 versus $1.68.
So it's a $1.08 markup. Oh, okay. I mean, that's why I'm making sure I got the number right. Well, that answers the question. Thank you.
And our utility sees there's if we could moderate that price a little bit, it would help 150, 160 people, customers in Angoon.
Mr. Chairman, has the Village Corporation or other municipal entity considered going into the fuel business rather than the local electrical co-op?
No. Money is just as tight with them as...
Well, where are you going to get the money as a co-op to go into the fuel business?
Well, I think it's very minimal. I think all we're doing is looking at a fuel truck. We're not... Are you asking me about the utility?
Right.
We're just looking at picking up a fuel truck to deliver fuel.
So your response when it was testified that there's infrastructure and some of these co-ops in the larger communities have significant infrastructure, pardon me, some of the distributors, and a co-op would be placed, there would be an imbalance in terms of competition because the co-op has been, this is what I've heard in testimony of grants and from other sources, Denali Commission and so on, and they already have infrastructure, and it was testified that they're not allowed to use the monies and the infrastructure from the Denali Commission in the scenario of a competitive co-op for fuel, your response is, in Angoon, we're not using any of the Denali Commission or grant money from the federal government or any other place for, if the bill were to pass, we would simply use other funds to purchase a fuel truck, and that would be our infrastructure. We wouldn't be using those grant monies.
No.
Okay. And just so I understand. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
By the way, Tom Boland is online, too. We'll get to you. I'm sorry I didn't see you on the list. It'll certainly give you a chance to testify as well when I read through all the names. Okay, so, and then Kate from Jared from the RCA is online for questions, if there are any. Okay, good. So Mark, next, and then we'll get to, again, Dean Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mark Hickey. I'm here on behalf of Petromarine Services. Petromarine Services, Alaska-owned, Alaska-based fuel marketing and distribution company in Alaska. We are principally in Southeast and in a number of locations in South Central. In the interest of time, I will just first say that the general comments that you heard from the gentleman from Delta Western, I think, reflect the views that we have at Petromarine Services as well. We have not taken a position in opposition to the bill. We are troubled by it. We see it as overly broad. We can see circumstances, you've been discussing them some already, where in a market area that you have no current distributor, a need to authorize a co-op to be able to go into the business. There should be some very specific rules that would govern that. One that hasn't been mentioned is that it should be revenue neutral to the state as far as payment of fuel taxes. With this new CS, you've addressed item 9 in the bill from the previous committee. I think that's something the committee would want to look at. Is there a revenue impact, particularly as it relates to fuel taxes? We need to see a level playing field, and the co-ops do have access to various grants, not just the Denali Commission, also U.S. Department of Agriculture, low-interest loans. I have the same question that was raised earlier about if, on the one hand, in making this investment, the assets of the co-op are not to be brought to bear, where then is the capital going to come from? It has struck us, particularly in the small communities, that when you come to tank farms, in the Angoon example, I don't know what the facts are in Angoon, fuel trucks one thing, but there needs to be a tank farm. If the tank farm is the co-op's tank farm, well, that's the use of the asset. So I don't know how that shakes out. Working something out that's very specific, that deals with certain circumstances where it makes sense to allow this, is something that Petromarine could support. We would suggest looking at the Regulatory Commission of Alaska possibly as a party to be involved in making determinations to allow such an action. They're generally involved with the co-ops now and rate setting. And with that, I'll conclude and see if there are any questions.
Thanks, Mark. Any questions? Mr. Hickey? Representative Guttmer?
Just I'm wondering if there was anybody from revenue online to.
There is not.
Okay.
But we can get them back. I'll keep public testimony open. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Okay, we'll go next to Dean Thompson.
Hey, yes, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I will try to observe the 2-minute limitation. I think Eric Uhld.
Dean, state who you're with for the record. Sorry, just so we have it in sequence here.
Sure. My name is Dean Thompson, and I'm an attorney who works for the Alaska Power Association.
Thanks. Go ahead.
And Mr. Uhld made a lot of the points that I was going to make. I guess I wanted to just cover 3 areas. First of all, just from a legal standpoint and a factual standpoint, cooperatives in Alaska are private member-owned corporations. They happen to be tax-exempt, but this private sector versus public sector is inapplicable when we're talking about cooperatives. Cooperatives are private member-owned corporations. They are not government entities. They are not public bodies. Second, as far as the concerns about competition in the fuel industry, from APA's perspective, that is, I guess, a, tertiary issue. Really, what we are talking about here is broader and more important than just fuel. We're talking about a cooperative's ability to own an interest in some other entity, and cooperatives have been doing that for years, just as nonprofit corporations have been, and for-profit corporations and other cooperatives. It is this power that allows cooperatives to wholly own education, nonprofit educational foundations, and for cooperatives to perform consulting services for other entities in the community. But it's always directed democratically from the members, what's in the members' best interest, and from the cooperative standpoint, doing it in a way that continues to preserve their tax-exempt status. And that tax-exempt status is in order to keep prices low, electricity prices initially, low for their members. So I guess it's important to recognize a cooperative for what it is. Secondly, as far as the fuel dealers concerns, there's a very large practical limitation on some of these worst-case scenarios that are being discussed, and that is that nonprofit electric cooperatives are subject to what's called the 85-15 test. And I'll just very briefly summarize it. Under federal tax law, a cooperative loses its tax-exempt status if it receives more than 15% of its revenue from either non-members or from providing services that aren't utility services. So when you're talking about these small rural electric utilities, you have a very firm limit on the scope of any sort of competitive harm, even if that were to occur. So I can answer questions about that if you want more information about that. And then finally, I just wanted to put into perspective what I think is a legal issue. And it has been discussed that House Bill 157, if passed, would somehow bring about a change that would allow cooperatives to compete with other entities for the very first time. I guess the first point to be made there is what the Alaska Power Association is talking about is simply the ability for a cooperative to own an interest in another legal entity. The cooperative would not be competing with anyone. If there was competition, it would be between the corporation or LLC or whatever that happens to have some competitive some competition with another entity. And the subsidiary itself most likely would be a for-profit or at least a taxable entity, and it would be subject to the same rules, requirements, and challenges as competitors. Again, I would agree with what I'd heard from the proponents earlier that this is not about competition. It's more about just bringing certainty to the existing power of a cooperative to own a subsidiary or own an interest in that. And I would remind the committee that nonprofit corporations in Alaska have that power. Other cooperatives other than electric and telephone cooperatives have the power to be members in other entities and own stock in them. And right now, today, through Alaska Statute 10.25.010A9, electric cooperatives have the right, have the power to own an interest or to become a member or own stock in another cooperative or a corporation. So House Bill 157, under the X version, if I understand it correctly, is not really a change to the law. It just adds a clarification, mainly with the LLC issue and by adding the term any lawful purpose. It clarifies the existing law, so it does not bring about this change. So the debate on whether to allow competition or not should be misplaced.
Dean, are there any questions for Mr. Thompson? Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, given your last comments,
my last comments or Dean's?
Oh, the witness, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Thompson. How is it that a member cooperative is going to finance the establishment or acquisition of a portion of a fuel distribution business out of their own equity or net worth.
Through the chair, Mr. Roper, if a cooperative were to do that, they could do it through partnership, or they could be one of many members of this entity. As far as where the money would come from, electric co-op, either the entity, the subsidiary, would borrow money on the market the way anyone else does as a for-profit corporation, or the cooperative, if it had to make a capital contribution, would use its retained earnings if that was approved by their governing board that's elected by their members. But it would be the same way that a nonprofit corporation might become a member of another entity.
So your testimony is they could do this under the current law now. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Mr. Roper, yes, that's my opinion, that the statute already provides that ability. Unfortunately, there have been these conflicting court decisions in other states that increases the uncertainty about that. I believe that if the issue were litigated in Alaska, a cooperative would win that litigation. But it would be after tens of thousands of dollars, if not more, in litigation fees and delay and uncertainty. And so from APA's perspective, that is what this very minor change, adding LLC and adding any lawful purpose, accomplishes. It gives increased certainty in light of these conflicting cases that have recently arisen.
Representative Roper?
Just very quickly, Mr. Chairman, so your opinion would be that the enumerated exceptions or allowable activities of an electrical cooperative under the statute that we're amending here, 1025-020, is not limiting the activities of a co-op, but by state, is there case law here about that, or decisions of the RCA, where the RCA would assert their authority prohibiting activities that are not statutorily allowed?
Through the chair, Representative Roeckberg, I'll take the last question first. As far as the RCA, and the RCA's chair is on the line as well, I believe their involvement would only, if we're talking about a subsidiary, their involvement would only be if the activities of that subsidiary fell within the RCA's jurisdiction. And so I don't think that would come into play. As far as the provisions of AS 1025.020, there are some utility-type services that are listed there that are specifically authorized. However, what I was referring to before was in AS 10.25.0109, which provides general powers for electric or telephone cooperatives, and it states, as it exists today, that electric or telephone cooperative may, quote, become a member of other cooperatives or corporations or own stock in them, end quote. And there are no limitations in this in that statute of limiting the generality of that clause.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Dean. Appreciate your testimony. Okay, we have a couple more fuel companies and two more electrics, two and two, actually, and then one more, and then I keep missing. I'm sorry. Tom Bolin, he's with NWAB, and I don't know what that is. So that being said, five of you left. If you could each please keep it to 2 minutes, and I gave Dean a little latitude because he is with Mr. Yule, then we will adjourn. So Bruce Bardo with Crowley Marine.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Bruce Bardo. I'm with Crowley Marine Services. With few exceptions, most communities in rural Alaska currently are being adequately served by existing private fuel suppliers. Many of these are owned by small business concerns who rely on this local business for all or some of their livelihood. These businesses provide a vital service to the individual consumers and the general public in those communities. HB 157 would jeopardize the significant investments made in Alaska by the private fuel distribution and delivery industry. It would also directly affect the viability of many in this business and could potentially result in lost jobs and reductions in the level and quality of services now being provided. HB 157 would jeopardize viability of these businesses by allowing regulated utilities to sell fuel to the same customers that these enterprises now rely on, and could have the effect of driving these entities out of business or severely impacting prices for other consumers not able to purchase fuel from the utilities. The private enterprise system now in place is providing essential services for fuel sales and delivery in Alaska. I encourage the committee to please avoid a legislative blanket solution that has the potential of causing lasting adverse impacts to these businesses and undermining the economic viability of those in private enterprise who continue to invest in that trade.
Thank you, Bruce. Bruce, you know, I asked Eric some tough questions from the Alaska Power Association regarding this, like the hypothetical, hey, if a co-op buys a subsidiary, and Dean already testified that he believes already that that can happen, but this expands to LLCs and other corporate-type entities for purchase and clarifies it if the bill passes. So already there's a speculation that co-ops can do this. But let's say, as I asked Eric, that this happens and then there's a presumption there's unfair competition. Conversely, there is a view, and I've heard that, I don't know if it was Crowley, but two of the fuel companies could merge or contemplating merging, where then it's almost a monopolistic scenario in that case. And I've had co-ops say, wait a minute, if that's the argument on the one hand, it could be conversely on the other, and fuel prices could raise higher. And before you answer that, secondly, I've also heard, hey, the bill passes, similar to the big oil companies with ELF restructure, we're going to pull out of, whether it's true or not, we're going to pull out of Alaska if you do this. What is your response to one, that there could be a monopoly in fuel company mergers, the larger ones, and two, hey, if the bill passes, we're gone?
Well, I'll try to answer the first question. Given the context, as some of you may be aware, I know there are many in the audience here that are aware that Crowley has been working and continues to work to acquire Yukon Fuel Company. We've been embarked on that path for some months now and still are working our way through the process. I'd also remind everybody that not too many years ago, there was a monopoly in Alaska, or maybe there were a couple of, and in different markets, but there were certainly very discreet monopolies in the market that were controlled by the major oil companies who, by and large, have totally withdrawn, if not completely withdrawn from much of the rural Alaska market in recent years. And I think part of the reason that those monopolies, or certainly large entities that had pricing control, withdrew from that market is they didn't feel that they were getting a satisfactory rate of return on their investment. And I think it's a unique situation in Alaska, particularly in a lot of the Western Alaska market that we serve, because of its isolation and seasonality, you tend to get a lot of price swings out there that may or may not, over time, they balance out with what's happening in the real market, but at a given point in time, let's say in September of any given year, may appear to be significantly out of sync with what's happening elsewhere in the market. And I think those anomalies will always exist, and they tend to, unfortunately, draw a lot of attention, particularly when prices are going up. They generally don't draw a lot of attention when prices are going down, but particularly in upward price cycles like we've all seen here in recent months, those anomalies tend to be pretty significant and very noticeable. So I don't know if that fully answered your question about the monopoly situation. I can say that Crowley has been, for many years, for lack of a better term, a monopoly situation in Kotzebue, where we are the only local tank farm operator, commercial tank farm operator. We have a relationship with the local village corporation in that community who competes with us for local home heating fuel sales. And clearly Crowley has, in that instance, Crowley has the ability to gouge the market, if you will. I can clearly tell you, from my perspective at least, and recognizing that I do have a bias, that we, our margins on our business at Kotzebue are acceptable margins, but they in fact are lower than in other communities where we do compete with other established tank farm operators. So it's all, you know, at the end of the day, it's all market driven, and I think it tends to balance itself out. I don't think you'll find a situation with the number of players that are in the market today in Alaska where you'll have a monopoly situation for very long, because those markets tend to equalize themselves over time.
Okay.
Because of the nature of the of competition.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. I appreciate you answering those questions. I don't see any questions, so we'll next. It's a good segue, since you brought up Kotzebue Electric, that Brad Reeve is on with Kotzebue Electric.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope you can hear me.
We can.
Thanks for the opportunity to testify. For the record, I'm Brad Reeve, General Manager of Kotzebue Electric Association. And I'm calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota, where I'm currently attending a meeting for the Utility Wind Interest Group. It's a national group that assists utilities integrate wind, and leads me into my testimony. We are very much in favor of House Bill 157. KEA has developed the only wind farm in the state, and we as a utility are looking for new business models to accommodate services needed in rural Alaska, which could be the development of wind consulting business or wind turbine construction company. And we have been asked to joint venture actually with two different turbine manufacturers for service and marketing. HB 157, of which we believe we have the right to do a lot of these things, clarifies some of this and allows us to move into those areas. Since we have a lot of attention that is going by prior testimony to fuel, one of the greatest concerns we have in rural Alaska today is the price of energy. Something that we did in 1978 was change the business model of purchasing fuel when we constructed our first storage tank. This change in infrastructure and delivery has saved our community millions and millions of dollars. In 1983, we combined with other utilities and formed a joint fuel buying group, including Nome Joint Utilities, Nooshagak, Naknek, Iliamna, New Halen, and Dalton, and later we were joined by Unalakleet. This group has been recognized as probably the most successful model for competitive fuel purchasing, and I think it's actually helped the people delivering fuel, because it does solve one of the issues that remains the problem in rural Alaska, and that is the ability to finance fuel deliveries and to be able to take deliveries. The Northwest Arctic Borough and the North Slope Borough have continued over a number of years to hold joint economic summits. This past February was the most recent, and during each of those, the cost of fuel and the cost of energy remains one of the highest priorities as an issue. And one of the major themes has been to look at finding ways to lower the price of energy. And without that sort of lower cost energy, economic development is stifled. And one of the things that could be a potential as we look for new models is to come up with a company that could provide some financing to entities. It's not uncommon to see fuel delivered to the same village at three different price levels, all for the same fuel.
Last year, to keep my testimony short, we celebrated our 50th anniversary. The utility was created out of the need and desire of the community to have its own electric company. Cooperatives are an integral part of Alaskan business. They were created by the citizenry to meet a need and exist to help lower costs. What we're really looking at for today are new models and methods of serving our communities and keeping our cost structures down. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thanks, Brad. I'm just going to ask one real quick question because we're super limited on time, but I'm going to give you the alternative hypothetical. Where the head of the fuel company owner or general manager has testified that their argument is, wait a minute, we sell at a certain price, what the market bears, and now you're giving this co-op an advantage, per se, to come in. It's certainly going to reduce the rates, but it's going to knock us out of business, which we've planned on with infrastructure and the like and employees and everything else. And it was testified, too, by Bruce that I think he's noted he thinks he's being fair in Kotzebue. What is your response to that, especially on the plane that's being argued that, hey, you're getting subsidies and grants and things from the Denali Commission, different injections of money that makes the playing field not equal?
Well, I think that there aren't – I know that in 1983 when we formed our fuel buying group, that was sort of the argument that that would lead to higher prices to the rest of the community, of which we haven't seen that take place. I think that if we want to encourage some competition, then we need to look at new business models to see what will work. It could be formulating something, and we've even looked at setting an arrangement maybe where we had a joint venture purchase some of the infrastructure that existed in Kotzebue. So I think there are potentially solutions to make things work, and I think we're in a good situation being the local company that's really interested in economic development to help make some of these things take place.
Thank you, Brad. Okay, we'll next go to Donna, then Mark, then Tom. I'm sorry, I'm going to really ask you to stick with 2 minutes. You're kind of the brunt here of our time limitation, so it wasn't intended, but we have 5 minutes. So I'll go past to 501, and then we'll have to conclude unless there are questions. So, Donna, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, committee member, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Donna Vukic. I'm the general manager of NACNIC Electric Association, and we are in support of House Bill 157. NACNIC Electric Association serves the communities of NACNIC, South NACNIC, and King Salmon. And additionally, NEA has a management agreement with Iliamna, New Halen, and Nondalton Electric Cooperative, and through the Denali Commission, and a technical agreement with Manicotic Power Company. NEA also provides radio communication to the Bristol Bay Borough, and our members have come to us and asked us to look into subsidiary businesses where we might be able to provide services to the community. This is including all types of services like we currently do, along with possible fuel distribution. While it's not our intent to be in competition with fuel distributors, if we were to operate a fuel business, we would assume that we would be on the same playing field and that it would be operated as a for-profit subsidiary. NEA spent the last 3 years actively engaged in economic development in Bristol Bay Borough, and the high energy costs are a definite deterrent to economic development. Our position on House Bill 157 is also supported by the Bristol Bay Borough and the Lake and Peninsula Borough, and your support for this bill is appreciated.
So, Donna, you're stating that Bristol Bay and what were the two boroughs?
Bristol Bay Borough and Lake and Peninsula Borough.
What are you cooking? I hear something in the back. Just kidding.
Nothing.
I'm just teasing. It sounded like a pot with water. Okay. Yeah, Representative Lynn.
She mentioned that there are some other services that they provide. Could she? She said several. Could she tell us what two or three of those might be?
Yes, we have a management and administrative agreement with INN Electric Cooperative in Iliamna, and we provide all of their management along with their billing and supervisory of their operations staff that's still located in Iliamna. We also have a technical agreement with Manicotic Power Company that provides training for power plant operation and also collections for the office staff. We also provide radio communications to Bristol Bay Borough at this time. So those are three of the things that the co-op has done over the last few years.
Thank you.
Okay, good. Well, thank you, Donna, for standing by. Thanks to everyone on the tail end of this. I know it's hard to listen through this. Mark, Representative Roper, hand up quicker, brother.
Yeah, I was going to ask a question of RCA and ask for some opinion letter out of them.
Let me do this in order here. Before we get to Mark at Yukon Fuel and Tom Boland in Kotzebue, we'll go to Kate. Are you still online, Kate?
This is Peter Russell with the Regulatory Commission. Kate had to leave, so she asked me to sit in, and my primary purpose was to answer any questions relating to power cost equalization.
Okay, we'll take a brief minute here for questions from the committee, then we'll get back to the last two testifiers. Representative Roper's question.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't hear the representative of RCA, but I would like to get an opinion letter or the response from RCA in written form to the committee members without taking any more time here today.
Do you understand that, sir?
On the following question, Mr. Thompson brought up the issue of AS 1025010, subsection 9. It provides for ownership of stock and corporations and so forth. And Mr. Thompson's testimony said that he believed his interpretation of the current statute would allow this activity to take place anyway. I would like to hear the RCA's opinion on that, particularly in light of 1025010 subsection 4, which delimits the abilities and powers of a cooperative. So there seems to be some internal tension between subsection 4 and subsection 9 in 010. Now, the bill adds another line item on top of 020 or whatever we're at here. I can't, yeah, whatever, wherever we're at.
020.
Yeah, 020. So I would like the RCA's opinion on their jurisdiction and also whether or not the RCA looks into the issue of solvency and cross ownership or any of these other issues that come up before them.
Is that possible for you to do?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we'll research that and get a letter to you.
Thank you very much. And if you could do that by Wednesday, that would be fantastic. And also, Dean, if Representative Rookberg, if you're still on, Mr. Thompson, if he didn't clarify what you testified to, I would recommend you call the RCA so they understand. And I think he understands the question, but to make sure we're in sync on that.
So, I will do that, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Dean. Okay, next we'll go to Mark Smith, Yukon Fuel, and then we'll wrap up with Mr. Boland.
Mark Smith. I am president of Yukon Fuel Company. One of the bad things about the end of a long day of testimony is that I've taken down notes that would probably take me 20 minutes to get through. Briefly then, I do believe that there is not a level playing field out there. I represent villages that are generally in western Alaska, small. We provide the fuel that for the most part goes to local resellers whose business it is to resell to the local community. There are some businesses that do benefit from a variety of subsidies, but I would say just offhand, I think the absolute lion's share has gone to the local electric utilities. And this is, you know, I think something that no one objects to. It's a fantastic thing to have that infrastructure renewed. It isn't fair, though, to, you know, the day after the Denali Commission turns over that tank farm to the local community for the local electric utility to get into the fuel business. And I think one of the major concerns that we've heard from a variety of the folks that have testified is the difference in the cost of fuel. Just as a side note, the gentleman from Angoon said his fuel price at his cooperative, I believe, was $1.67. And, you know, from the last time I looked at the Seattle prices, it's well over $2 a gallon FOB Seattle. So I think there's sometimes confusion between what the utility gets for its cost of fuel and what you actually have to charge to cover a profound level of infrastructure to both wholesale and retail a variety of fuel products in the local markets. So I've, just in conclusion, I thought I'd say that in looking at the cost of fuel, I don't think that this bill will help lower the cost of fuel. I think there are many businesses that it may be appropriate for utility to be in, but as long as there's another provider in any of the utility service area, I think that HB 157 does not do a favor to private industry and certainly not the community.
Thanks, Mark. I understand, and I apologize. It's hard when we have so many folks testifying, and then you get into questions, and then you run out, and I think your input is important, or if not more than many, because of your having your outreach throughout Alaska with your business. What I was going to recommend is that Ray, you work with? Yeah, that Ray's been real attentive, as has Mark and Pat, on this issue, and maybe if there are specific things, you can either have Ray help you draft or get another letter. I know you dated one on the 7th, which is in our packet. We all have it. But in case there's something salient or that you're really opposed to that was testified to, if you weren't able to talk about it today and during the committee, and we'll take that and pass it out. I don't see any questions at this time. We know where to reach you for sure, and I'll keep the public testimony open into Wednesday. So we'll next go to Tom, and then that'll be it for the meeting today.
Good afternoon, Chair Anderson and members of the committee. My name is Tom Boland. I am a public services director with Northwest Arctic Borough, headquartered in Kotzebue, and I'd like to speak in favor of House Bill 157. As Mr. Reeve previously testified in his testimony, we've been working on this bulk fuel issue for about the last 3 years. Specifically, we're concerned about the cost of fuel, the ever-increasing cost of fuel. And one concept that we've looked at is the formation of a bulk fuel cooperative. Now, in our cooperative, the membership of the cooperative would actually only be entities that are involved in bulk fuel. It would not be the individual home resident consumers. So our concept is a little different than maybe some of those that have been talked about already. We recognize that state statute does not currently prohibit what we want to do, but as others have said, if it were to pass, it would clarify that to save us from some legal challenge that may come in the future. So we're in favor of this passage of this bill. In our region, one of our electric cooperatives is the natural choice of an entity to form a subsidiary company, which could act as a bulk fuel cooperative. Clearly, we could start a new cooperative, but it seems to be more efficient to use an existing cooperative structure if it exists. So we'd like to thank you for your consideration, and we think that this would be not creating an unlevel playing field. Clearly, any cooperative entity that's considering going into fuel has to weigh whether this is a smart business decision and whether they can capitalize the infrastructure. In many cases, it will prove that they wouldn't be able to. So I don't see that this is a huge turning of the tables. In a few instances, this may work, and we're just asking for fairness. We have cooperatives in telephone, electric, and water and sewer around the state, and we feel that it's only fair that bulk fuel be allowed to move in that direction if it works out. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom, very much. Thanks for waiting so long. And now I know what NWAB means, so that's good to know. I don't see any questions at this stage. Again, if there's something pressing from the committee members, they can either contact you by phone or I'll bring you back on Wednesday, and we will adjourn with this bill still before us at 5:07. Thank you.